Hey everyone, and welcome to the Sunny Go One Piece podcast. On this episode, we're going to be diving into episodes 496 through 498, which will cover one chapter, 585. They somehow managed to stretch this into three episodes, or I guess I should say two. But yeah, now that Luffy, Ace, and Sabo are brothers, we get to see all the shenanigans that they get up to. So synopsis, we see Luffy, Ace, and Sabo grow as brothers as they go on small adventures and eventually move out of Dadon's place into their own treehouse hideout. And all the while, we learn a bit more about Sabo's background. So, differences. There are a couple, as they do stretch one chapter into what is essentially three episodes. But yeah, at the beginning, there's the added scene of Sabo and Luffy dueling in addition to Luffy and Ace's duel. So in the manga, we only see Luffy and Ace go at it. But in the anime, there's a separate fight between Sabo and Luffy going at it as well. Another difference is all the scenes leading up to them ending up at the ramen restaurant is added filler, as in the manga, the scene starts with them already jumping out the window after dining and dashing. Most of the events of episode 497 up until they move into their treehouse is told in a montage in the manga, whereas in the anime, they are fully fleshed out scenes with dialogue as well. And then finally, in the anime, we get to see their ASL Jolly Roger flag, but in the manga, this is actually never shown, so it's interesting to see that. Alright, so let's get into my thoughts. So the first scene of them dueling, it puts Luffy's fruit into perspective for me, as when we first start the series, Luffy has more or less mastered the basics and fundamentals of how to use his fruit. He can confidently wield his powers, and while I never really gave it much thought, because One Piece, unlike many other shonen series, doesn't really have like a training arc. I guess it does, but you know, it's nothing on the level of like what Dragon Ball, Naruto, or Bleach has. I just kind of assumed that Luffy naturally picked it up as he grew older, but in this scene, we do see that Luffy did have to really practice to be able to wield his powers correctly. And even Ace questions and mocks him about what good is it being rubber, really, when it comes to combat prowess, which is also what a lot of people say in real life when they don't know much about One Piece. When they hear that the main character's power is that he can turn himself into rubber, people are immediately like, WTF, that's stupid. However, from just this one scene, we really do see that it took Luffy some amount of work to even make it viable, let alone effective, as we see him mess the timing up on his most basic move, the Gomu Gomu no pistol, and punch the ground right into his face, which is pretty funny. Next, we get to see the trio go into the city to sell some of that gator hide that they get, and here we get a good deal of world building in regards to Luffy's home island, and it was far bigger than I had ever thought, because in the beginning, it seemed like Fusha Village was just a really small village, and that's kind of what I pictured the entire island to be. But so Luffy's hometown of Fusha Village and where they are currently on Mount Korbo with Dadan are kind of in the rural outskirts of the island. But as we move further inland, we've got the Great Terminal, which we learned in context is like a dumping ground for this new city of the Goa Kingdom. And just from the description, we can already see the immense class divide in the kingdom in neatly divided layers too, I might add. With the Great Terminal where the literal trash is thrown out, then you have the Edge Town, the Midtown, and High Town, and then the Central Palace, all working to segregate everybody by social and wealth hierarchy, with sort of the Edge Town being sort of like the slums where a lot of like crime and homeless people kind of roam. And then you got the Midtown with like the normal people, the High Town with like the nobles, and then obviously the Central Palace working as for the royalty up there, and where everybody's trying to basically move up in class. And this in turn, you can imagine living near a society like this is what led Dragon to kind of start his revolutionary army, probably seeing this on a daily basis. It's possible seeing the injustice of a society like this on a small scale being replicated on a global scale by the Celestial Dragons and the world government kind of cemented in his mind that something had to change. Okay, so there's the scene of the three after they've managed their big sale of the gator hide, and they're talking about getting ramen for lunch, and Sabo asks, "What's ramen?" And this has to be an inside joke for fans of Naruto, with Junko Takeuchi being the voice of Naruto, like we talked about in the last podcast. And as anyone who's watched or read Naruto knows, he is famous for loving ramen. And so it's just a funny, like, inside joke hearing Naruto ask what ramen is. And also another fun fact about One Piece, Naruto, and ramen. So originally, Sanji's character was actually supposed to be named Naruto in reference to his curly eyebrow being inspired by the food Naruto, which is a type of kamaboko or cured fish that iconically has this sort of pink swirly look to it, which is often found as a topping for ramen. However, at the time, Oda knew that Jump was getting ready to debut a new and upcoming series less than a year from then called Naruto, and knew it was going to be a long-running series, so he quickly decided to change the character's name from Naruto to Sanji. And of course, he was right, and the two of them, along with Taite Kubo, you know, his Bleach, they all ran for more than a decade, each comprising the big three of the Shonen Jump during the 2000s. I also like in the Dining and Dash scene, Luffy, always the somewhat polite one, leaves an IOU note after dining and dashing. And I often wonder when I see these, him like give these out, whether he'll go around the world at the end of the series to pay back all those IOUs he's kind of left around everywhere. Sabo is eventually recognized by someone in town who turns out to be his father, and it's revealed that Sabo is a nobleman that ran away. But the one thing I noticed was strange in the Japanese adaptation of the dialogue is that during this exchange where Sabo explains all this, the anime goes out of its way to change how the Great Terminal is referred to. Because whenever it's mentioned in this specific conversation in the manga, it's referred to as Gomiyama or Trash Mountain. But in the anime, they go out of their way to not use that terminology for some reason, and instead refer to it as Great Terminal or That Place. And I unfortunately have no context for this, whether it was for some reason that made it insensitive to use this term, or if this term was just ambiguous. I don't know why they had to change this, but I did some research and I really couldn't come up with anything. But I just thought I'd point it out because it does seem like a really odd minor change that I can't seem to find the purpose of. Then we get a flashback within a flashback to Sabo's younger days as we learn the extent of what society was like in the Gowa Kingdom. And Sabo is being groomed so that his family as noble people can marry into the royal family and move up in the social hierarchy. Now this isn't a new concept in One Piece as we've seen this with the Celestial Dragons, but I'd argue this is far more a tangible depiction of this as the Celestial Dragons are like comically corrupt and elitist, to the point where it borders on a caricature, but this depiction is more sort of the ordinary people and more sort of normal upper class of the Gowa Kingdom. And you see how it is kind of in the day-to-day life and something that we as readers and viewers can much more relate to as we see this kind of stuff happening in our everyday real life where children are abused for gain of wealth and fame for the parents, or the rich and upper class people getting a slap on the wrist for crimes while the lower class get harsh sentences for lighter crimes, or even not committing a crime at all. And so you see this class divide happen. And this, like with Sabo and his parents and like how things happen in his daily life, seem much more relatable than the insanity that the Celestial Dragons are. But it's in this flashback, along with the preamble of the Sabaody arc, that the Celestial Dragons, where we really see the true evil in the world, it's not sort of these dangerous pirates we've encountered up till now. They're just a symptom of the real problem, and that is the corrupt nature of the world government and the world nobles who perpetuate the systemic oppression and inequality among people. And on a side note, if you listen to Sabo's dad, who's named Outlook the Third, he's actually voiced by Cho, who is, of course, our favorite skeleton Brook as well. But yeah, after we get to see why Sabo left his home, we get them all declaring their dreams, with Ace saying he wants to become a great pirate, proving everyone wrong about him and his existence. And then we also learn Sabo's dream is to become a world-class author with stories about his journeys. But something very curious happens when we get to Luffy, because for some reason, we don't actually get to hear him yell his dream, which naturally you'd think would be his usual, I'm going to become the Pirate King, which we've heard a million times now, but we don't actually hear him say it this time. And it's covered up by the waves, and we don't actually hear him say anything. And at the time, I really didn't think anything of this moment, actually, which I'm a little embarrassed because it seems so clear that Oda was trying to tell us something. But I just assumed he said that he was going to be the Pirate King. And Ace and Sabo were kind of just laughing at the ridiculousness of that statement by a crybaby and weak Luffy. But based on more clues we get throughout the series, I begin to doubt that there may have been more to this moment. And even with just that moment alone, I should have picked up on something that was different. But we'd finally get a more explicit confirmation much, much later, even as recently as just last year. And it's clear as day now that Luffy has some other dream that he has yet to state, and something that Oda is keeping very secret about. It seems that finding the One Piece and becoming the Pirate King is actually only part of Luffy's overall dream, and that we have yet to actually know what that is, which is why it's kept a secret here. And I'll talk a little bit more about this in the spoiler section, because it's pretty hard to speculate on what his dream could be without more information. But the big climax of this episode, of course, is the moment they all exchange Sakazuki and Sake Cups to pledge to become brothers. Now, I'm not an expert on this subject, so take this with a grain of salt, even if I did do a little bit of research on my end. But at the end of the day, I can't drink alcohol and I don't live in Japan. But I do know that exchanges of the sake cups is a very traditional ritual that happens when a pledge or a vow is made. And I think in modern times, this tradition has more or less kind of fallen out of favor. But, you know, back in the history, you'd have like warriors and samurai exchange sakazuki to solidify their pledge to each other before going into battle, or you'd often see it during weddings between the betrothed. So from what I can tell, this is still a common practice among the Yakuza or the Japanese mafia. And we've also seen this is how Whitebeard had his sons pledge to be part of his family / crew. So it seems to be understood as a very traditional ritual in the One Piece world. But in the real world, yeah, you still do see it, I think, but it's just very much more rooted in old-fashioned traditions, not more so in sort of modern-day traditions. Another thing I wanted to mention about the significance of them becoming brothers is a bit more, like, to kind of give more context to it, because it's not more just, like, to create a tighter bond. Like here in the U.S., being brothers is certainly a step up from being friends, but in Japanese culture, being siblings goes much more deeper, and especially the eldest sibling has a lot more responsibility. They have a responsibility to uphold the family name in good light. They're often expected to take on a leadership role in the family and be a role model and caretaker for the younger siblings. And of course, these roles, as time has gone on, have become a little bit more fluid and less rigid, but they're still there. And like in my family, I'm the eldest brother, but my younger sister, who's just a year younger than me, takes on way more of that role, mostly because she likes that level of control and I'm much more lazy and laid back. But yeah, in most times, the older sibling often has the most responsibility in a family, and it's more so than just sort of a tighter bond. And this is why when we and the Straw Hats first meet Ace, you can see him taking some responsibility, saying, "Thanks for taking care of my troublesome brother," and why he's so protective of Luffy, which no doubt played a big role in why Ace decided to not only take that final, you know, fatal blow, but why he also decided to stay behind and protect Luffy from Sakazuki in the first place. Of course, just as it was hinted at during the earlier mini-flashback, there indeed was a third cup for Sabo as the third brother, and so we finally get confirmation that yes, Sabo was actually the third person in that. I mean, if it wasn't clear by now, it should be. Before moving on, there's a scene that happens that cracks me up so hard. And again, it's a filler scene, but it's a scene where Dadan is trying to sleep and she's dreaming about being in this sort of fantasy world, only to have Luffy interrupt it so damn funnily. Like, whoever was a screenplay writer for this arc was a genius, because all the added material is amazing. And the way the fairy is revealed to be Luffy and then just sucker punches her in the gut while being hit with the Gomu Gomu no pistol, and then in reality Luffy falling onto her gut. The scene with the kids and Makino are also really fun and cute as well. So I like all the expanded material that they included here in the filler section. And then also Garp showing up was also another hilarious moment, and I particularly love his intro as he's walking up to the house and he falls prey to the trap hole and just like falls right in and all annoyed. And like I said in the differences section, this whole section from the point after the Sakazuki ceremony and when they move out of the treehouse is actually only told in montage in the manga. But in the anime, we do actually get these moments in fully fleshed out moments and scenes. And I really like that choice that they went with that. And And normally, you know, I don't necessarily like one chapter being spread out this much, but there was actually surprising a lot of material that they could work with. And we get to see just how much Luffy is loving having a real family now, as well as we get to see Dada and her gang, especially Dogra and Mogra, come to really care for the kids, even though she doesn't really want to admit it herself. She does really start to care for them quite a bit, and it's pretty sweet. And, you know, it's like I am hoping that you see what I mean by Dada kind of grows on you as this story goes on. And honestly, that scene of Dada caringly looking over the three in the middle of the night was also really sweet, but then also really funny because she takes that massive mallet to the gut due to their sort of Rube Goldberg trap that they have for security. I think this whole part is just really funny and well done. Now, the final episode of this trio is actually a part one of a two-part mini filler set. And it takes place in the middle of the flashback. And I think the beginning portion of this was built off of one of the panels from the manga, actually, that was absent from the montage leading up to the treehouse, where we see the brothers taking down one of those big-ass tigers, but lurking in the background is another bigger tiger waiting to pounce them. But in this scene, they were fighting a polar bear, or a dampa, as they call it, and then the tiger comes out at them from behind. But the rest of the story follows a wholly original story about them going after said tiger for revenge, and then them running into a former pirate captain named Naguri, with a few things to kind of set up canon events that'll later happen. But one interesting thing this filler adds to the lore is the fact that in the manga, we never learn how Luffy found out that Ace was Gold D. Roger's son. Nor do we know if Sabo ever actually knew that Ace was his son either. And so this filler makes it clear that not only did Sabo know right from the get-go, or at least from an early point, and that Sabo is the one that told Luffy. And seeing as how we have yet to get any sort of conflicting accounts from the manga, I just assume that this is how loosely things played out, is that at some point, I don't assume that the whole Naguri thing happened, but at some point, Sabo knew, and he told Luffy. And I did laugh a good amount when Sabo was telling him not to mention this in front of Ace, but the first thing Luffy does when he walks into the hideout is ask him about Roger. Because they play it off like, oh, maybe Luffy will actually, like, play along with Sabo, but nope, he couldn't even hold it on for like a split second. And the episode ends with Sabo's dad hiring Blue Jam's crew to bring him back, which wasn't shown in the manga, but was definitely implied, as we see later on. Because in the manga, it goes from the end of that montage straight to basically Sabo's dad already finding them. So this stuff in between was basically implied. Now, yeah, I really like seeing the sort of the playful side of Luffy spending time with his brothers, and you can really tell that Luffy loves to be around people, and especially those he loves. And the sudden, you know, filler episode is a little annoying, and we will have one more at the beginning of the next podcast, but yeah, I think it's just minor detail or minor detour, and so overall, I think it works. But yeah, it's nice to have these fun moments because the rest of the flashback gets pretty intense, as most Oda One Piece flashbacks do. If you did enjoy this, send me a like or a comment. And if you want to join me on this journey of rewatching One Piece, please consider subscribing. Check out my Instagram and Twitter at SunnyGoPodcast if you want updates of when I post new episodes. And as always, I wanted to thank you for taking the time out to listen to the podcast. And yeah, just a minor spoiler section about Luffy's dream. But if you're not interested in that, stay safe out there, and I hope to see you on the next episode. Bye! Alright, so the subject of Luffy's real dream, and we've gotten several more hints at this, but I have come no closer to actually understanding what his real dream is, but we've gotten several scenes that sort of expand on this idea. First off, a lot of it comes from Wano, where we see Roger actually express this similar same dream, and Whitebeard's reaction to it was also the same, as well as Oden. They all just kind of like laugh at how childish this dream is. And then we get the big scene, and one of my favorite scenes in the series is when Luffy finally reveals that to his crew. And both times, We don't get to see or hear what the actual dream is, but we see the reactions of everyone. And it's all pretty similar. It's either like shock or just like flat out hilarity. Like they're just like laughing at how ridiculous and childish this dream is. And kind of like putting things together, and I'm not going to go too far into this, but my theory, and this, I believe I heard this from, it's very similar to, what was it? It's a YouTuber, I think it's Artur. He put out, he has great videos. He has this really long video about the sort of the theory of like what Luffy's dream is. But I really like his idea, and because it was kind of my initial thought too, is that Luffy wanted to do a sort of big unifying party, like, because it would be a logical next step in terms of like the extension of Luffy, because after every victory and arc he has this huge party. And then also, like, one of the big things with Skypiea, where the first, like, the Nika pose showed up, and the thing that Luffy or Oda was very, you know, happy about in terms of his favorite scene, is that big party on Skypiea, where we see, like, everyone coming together, whether it be the Shandians, the Skypeans, the animals, and even Nora, the big snake. And you see them all coming together. And I think something similar, it is basically what Luffy's dream is to just hold a big-ass party. Which does sound really childish and it's kind of stupid. But, I mean, yeah, why would you seek out the One Piece and the power and wealth and fame that it grants you and use that to throw a party? But that seems very Luffy. And it makes sense, like the idea of unifying the world and setting them all free. So yeah, that's kind of like what I always imagined Luffy's ultimate dream to be, but I don't know that anyone really actually knows, because Oda has been incredibly secretive about this. Like we have gotten very few clues as to what this dream explicitly is. Now, yeah, there are plenty of internet theorists that have picked and combed through the story to come up with their theories, but I personally like this one. If that was really the end, I think I wouldn't be disappointed. In fact, I would be very much welcoming of that ending. It's really, I think it really fits Luffy. So yeah, that's kind of my sort of thoughts on Luffy's real dream. But yeah, I like this idea that Luffy becoming the Pirate King is only just a stepping stone to his actual real dream, which is obviously to help people. I mean, that's what Luffy has always been known for. And so I think it'll lead to something that benefits all of humanity and all the people in the world of One Piece. But yeah, that's kind of what I wanted to briefly share. But thanks for listening, and see you on the next podcast.